If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week. Before the end of the hour, Ashley Merriman is an attorney. She previously served in the Clinton administration and right now volunteers as a head of a small inner city tutoring program. We're going to talk about winning and losing and what are the differences between a winning and losing performance. Why are we able to rise to the top one day and maybe the next day you're not doing so well? Can we in fact become better competitors? Maybe identify your own competitive style and work from there. Thank you for coming on the show today, Ashley. A great topic because this is Final Four weekend and the college basketball season ends on the Monday, and only one team will win on Monday night, and two teams will win tonight. I'd like to know, you know, winning, everybody wins, and everybody, there's a winner and a loser. What do you make of this everybody gets a trophy mentality in today's culture?
Oh, I hate it. and the reason I hate it is because what we're telling kids, and I think it really is especially true for kids, I think bosses are a little more leery to hand out bonuses to everyone regardless of performance, right? But I think we're telling people that failure is so terrible, we have to pretend even the losses are a win. And great competitors, great innovators, need to understand that losing is part of the process. It's okay to lose. It's what did you learn from that experience? How are you going to come back for that? And, you know, it's interesting. The research says that great innovators, great competitors need a sense of agency, a belief that they can set their own vision and trust their opinion on how they're doing and know when to move forward and when to ask for help. And if you're telling kids everybody gets a trophy, think about that in terms of what this really means in that kid's development. The kid who did really well, the kid who did score the soccer goals, they tell me they're really frustrated because they're like, I worked really hard and I did really well and nobody's recognizing that. And the kids who did really badly, they're just as confused. They're saying, I did terribly. Why are you telling me I did so great? And, you know, they're saying, you know, isn't this when you're supposed to offer me help? And instead you're just saying, no, 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 don't trust your opinion of how you did. I'll tell you how you did. And I think that's really destructive. I think we need to tell kids, yeah, we're all going to screw up some days. It's how much did you improve and what are you going to do the next time?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
That's so much more valuable
than
a trophy.
More. And that's why they put scoreboards on playing fields.
Yes, I have parents who tell me, oh, we don't keep score. I'm like, well, but the kids did.
That's pretty weak. That's pretty weak. Here's Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike.
One of the things that Phil Jackson always said was that Michael Jordan was the toughest competitor between the lines. This question came from a listener when I tweeted fact that the show and the book Top Dog, and by the way, the website is topdogbook.com. When I tweeted that earlier in the week, one of the people wrote in, Michael Jordan was always the toughest competitor, but when he went to baseball, he didn't succeed. What does the book tell us about what he should have done differently?
You know, I've actually thought that exact question, and I think some of it has to do with expectations and, you know, the determination, are you playing to win? I don't know if he was really playing to win in terms of that full commitment to try as hard as he was doing. Or we certainly thought this was just some sort of lark and weren't taking it as seriously. I don't know about him. But I think that all-consuming passion, the even anger sometimes when you're not doing well. You know, last fall, one of the guys who won the Nobel Prize for Medicine, during his press conference where he's explaining to the world why he won the Nobel Prize, he does that a little bit, and then out whipped his high school report card and how he got this bad grade for science and his science teacher told him, you have no future in science. And everybody kind of laughed and went, oh, stupid science teacher. But my reaction was, wow, that fueled him for the next 10, 20, 40 years. So the first thing when he got his Nobel Prize would be, look, I showed everyone I could do it when they told me I was wrong. And I think that passion, that fire, may have sort of been missing in the baseball sabbatical, I think, that Michael Jordan was taking.
I will tell you a story about Michael Jordan and basketball, just since it illustrates it so well, that I was told by Phil Jackson. He would, when he was on the, when the Bulls would practice on a off day during the Michael Jordan era, he would put Michael Jordan plus the second team against the rest of the first team and one of the guys who would replace Michael Jordan. And so basically they expected that Michael Jordan's team would lose, but it never lost.
right.
And the only advantage they gave Michael Jordan is he could name the end of the game time, and he would have to name it 5 minutes before the game was over to give the other team a chance. Michael Jordan would never name a quit time unless he was ahead by unless his team was ahead by a considerable time. So one day he decided that in fact he would, the other guys had 3 days off. So it was the first day of the 3 day off period. So they said, we're going to play until we win. We will outlast him today. This is the rest of the first team. And after 8 hours, they said, this is getting ridiculous because Michael Jordan. And so they let Michael Jordan win. And that just shows you his, he would not quit unless he was a winner.
Yeah, and I think you have to do that. I mean, you also have to understand that, you know, there's, you know, a chance that you are going to win. And if you have that chance, that's really empowering. That's motivating. You know, that close race, it doesn't mean a guarantee of a win, but the feeling that you can do it and it's in your grasp changes physiology. And now, I always think of, you know, a football game, especially at a blowout, where the team that's winning, those guys are hopping up and down at the end of the game, right? I mean, they are just raring to go. They have more energy than when they started. The team that's losing, they're breathing hard. They look like they're about to pass out. But they've both been playing the same game, right? So what's going on? It turns out when you have a challenge, when you believe you can do it, doesn't mean it's assured, but you can do it, you're blood vessels actually dilate. Your heart rate changes. A researcher at the University of Rochester has found that people in this challenge state can have up to almost 2 liters more blood pumping out of their heart per minute. I mean, this is a huge increase.
Wow, that's incredible.
Now,
yeah, their lungs dilate. The way they process glucose is faster. But when you're in a threat, when you think you're going to lose, your veins actually contract. Because your body is actually trying to literally stave off the bleeding.
Now, I'm going to bring this back in the second segment to a ping pong game I have every Saturday where I typically lose to a guy who's 18 years older than I am, should never win, always says I got I got 13 stents, 2 defibrillators. I mean, he starts the day. I got dandruff, 2 defibrillators, 13 stents. Foot fungus, etc., and then he beats me. But anyway, we'll come back to that in the second segment. But you have a chapter called The Utter Importance of Pillow Fights, and I loved it. Tell me what you mean by that. Tell the listeners what you mean by that.
Well, that actually comes is based out of research from the University of Montreal's Professor Daniel Paquette. And he says that right now the focus in parenting is all about attachment parenting, nurturing, protecting, comforting children. And that's important, but that's not parents' only job. Parents are also there to encourage kids to explore, to challenge themselves, to do new hard things. And that job doesn't stop when you finally convince the kid to go from that step of crawling to walking across the room. It's pushing them. And in Paquette's research, he's actually found that one of the great ways to train kids to emotionally regulate, to be controlling how they respond in a conflict, is through roughhousing.
We'll be back with Ashley Merriman in a minute. Her book is called Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing, here on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to greatstartgtl.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at greatstartgtl.com. That's greatstartgtl.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to greatstartgtl.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are Dr. Mike, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galuski.
Dr. Mike's Real Age tip of the week in 5 minutes. Ashley Merriman, co-author of Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. Don't be a loser. Read the book. It's published by 12 Books. And here again, Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
So, Ashley, we were talking about the importance of pillow fights.
Right. So we all know those moments when someone is in a competition and all of a sudden they just lose it. You know, the sort of McEnroe throw the tennis racket and have a
You
tantrum.
Can't be serious.
Exactly. Well, it, you know, how do you
I felt
get
like
to
saying
point?
That, by the way, with the Greek bailout. When they had this craziness. That, you can't be serious. They're confiscating the money.
Exactly. So we all have these moments where we have to get up for the competition, but when do we not go overboard? And that turns out a great way to learn that is when kids are roughhousing. Now, we're not talking about the kids themselves, right? Because we've all heard that. They're all playing, they're all laughing, they're wrestling, having pillow fights, and all of a sudden someone's screaming, right? Mommy, he hit me hard. Right?
Right,
but
right.
But when the parents are in charge, not the kids, but the parents are playing Tickle Monster or I'm going to get you around the room, the parents are watching the kid be excited, and when they're just about to get, you know, too far, then you stop. I freeze, and I just wait for the kid, and then the kid's sort of watching me and paying attention, and then I tickle again. It's about teaching the kids to pay attention to what's a real threat. When do I need to stand up for myself? Ah, that's just playing. I don't need to worry about that. And Daniel Paquette's work 3 years later found the kids, when the parents were in charge of roughhousing, were doing much better at doing just that, defending themselves, letting things that weren't confrontation pass by, and being more able to regulate their emotions.
So how do you suggest parents can help their kids find balance aside from just pillow fighting and things like that?
Find in terms of that emotional regulation?
Yes.
I think it's also about maybe playing games of chance, you know, crazy eights or sorry, where there's no reflection on a kid's ability. It's just what card they got. So that they get this idea that, hey, kids win, kids lose, it's no big deal, we'll play again later. So they're not so invested in thinking that a win is some sort of statement on who they are, or a loss is some statement on who
now,
they are.
Now, we see that professional athletes, and even in the case of the Rutgers coach, we see that winning is becoming more important than the game at times.
Right.
I mean, with the steroid usage and the abuse of the players. Mm-hmm. Tell us, talk a little bit about that.
I think that has to do with when the stakes get so high that we see things as a zero-sum game. And that every game is the make or break and lose perspective, because that's not true, right? I mean, you know, we've got this weekend as the Final Four. But up until then, you've had tons of games to lose and come back. So having focus on this one particular thing as a crisis is a focus then on how the prizes have become too high. We were talking lately about, you know, kids walking out of an SAT exam, right? Normal school is about learning and having friends and relationships and mastering skills. But you walk out of an SAT and nobody says, oh, well, I'm not going into the college I want, but gosh, I made so many friends at the Kaplan Center and I learned vocabulary. Nobody does that, right? It's I passed, I didn't. And that, I think, is also happening in professional sports, where the bonuses that the coaches are getting are so high depending on how well they did, right? It was 20 minutes after the team got kicked out of the NCAA that coaches started being announced that they were fired. I mean, it was instantaneous. So I think especially for that college and the NCAA thing, we've got to say, hey, this is about young men and young women learning and learning skills and learning at school and doing other things besides just that win. I think that's when we really get into trouble.
Now, how do we cut back? In other words, it seems to me that the professional sports always have this, and the risk, obviously, is that you give them a huge enough fine if they do it, or a huge enough problem if they do it. But one of the most interesting things to me was I talked to a physician who's a school doctor at a major university where the guys on the school team would never think of taking drugs because they would get caught. But the guys on the intramural team, 60%, he said, of the intramural players are using enhancing drugs, which seemed to me just incredible.
Well, also some of that has to do with the fact that the more you compete, the more you understand the demands. You know, researchers looked at cross-country runners and found that the runners who were, you know, complete novices, they were doing it for physical fitness or because they wanted to and they enjoyed it. The elite were doing it because of what they would get out of it. And those middle people, the ones who are trying to get to elite, they're the ones who were the most focused on their competitors, their status, because they were trying to get themselves this winning identity that they didn't have yet. And they didn't have enough experience to sort of put it all in perspective.
And we're talking with Ashley Merriman, author or co-author with Poe Bronson of Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. You can obviously find it on Amazon or topdogbook.com. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. Thank you, Ashley. Time now for Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week.
And this is Fight Cancer with a Spear. Go ahead. Dig into the season's delicate asparagus spears. There's nothing like in-season produce for flavor and nutrients and price. And behind the scenes, your pancreas and maybe your libido, hey, they are a sex symbol, will thank you. Getting lots of folate, specifically from food, not so much from supplements, protects you from cancer of the pancreas, that small abdominal organ with important functions, including secreting insulin. And just half a cup of asparagus delivers 190 micrograms, more than 25% of your daily needs for folate, not sex. Folate is a member of that B vitamin group, and it's long been touted as a heart helper. Some early research also links 800 micrograms a day of folate to a lower risk of colon, breast, ovarian, and lung cancers when you get it from food. Pancreatic cancer prevention is just the newest member of the Why We Love Asparagus family. Although pancreatic cancer is pretty rare, it's stealthy and nasty. The one-year survival rate, only 25%. Even Steve Jobs, who had a relatively benign form, obviously succumb to it. So anything you can do to prevent it, especially when it involves something delicious, is welcome. To do asparagus right, toss the woolly ends of succulent stalks away with abandon. Then steam the spares, or, my favorite way, cut them into 2-inch little pieces, marinate them with a little olive oil, extra virgin, of course, with some rosemary, and then put them in an oven on a cookie sheet at 275 degrees for about 45 minutes. Turn them a couple times, and you'll get something that tastes better than French fries. Joe?
Sounds great, Dr. Mike. Hey, stay with us, and thanks for listening. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, right here on Radio MD. Stay well.
Are you tired of getting sick and tired? Are you tired of doctors not knowing what's wrong with you? D-Herbs may have the answer. D-Herbs, number one in herbal remedies. D-Herbs' main goal is to enlighten and properly educate people to the importance of human health and nutrition. D-Herbs, home of the full body cleanse. Everyone needs to cleanse. If you eat meat and dairy products, you need to cleanse. If you're eating processed foods, you need to cleanse. 90% of today's diseases that we suffer from are diet-related. Cleansing opens a door to healing and rejuvenation. Whether you need help with a chronic disease, weight loss, or to jumpstart and eliminate fatigue, D-Herbs Full Body Cleanse can help. There's a better way to live and healthier way to live. Experience healing. Visit us at dherbs.com. That's D-H-E-R-B-S.com. Or call us at 866-434-3727. That's 866-434-3727.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.